Love Osho podcast brings you the real stories of the people whose lives have been inspired and transformed by Osho. We explore why thousands of people are falling in love with Osho and where to find them. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Swami Antar Sudananda. Sudananda took sannyas in 1982 and is a classically trained musician. Sudananda played music live for Osho and continues to play Osho music today. Sudananda, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Swaram. And thanks for inviting me to be on the show.
Okay, so to start, tell us a little bit about how you came across Osho.
Well, I first heard about Osho when I was probably about 20. I was in music school at North Carolina School of the Arts, and a friend of mine had some magazines. They were probably came from India, publications, you know, of Osho, sort of like the Rajneesh Times came to be, that kind of thing. And I, you know, saw some pictures of him and felt attracted and asked some questions, but not a lot, and then met some friends of my friends in North Carolina on the street in Chapel Hill. There were sannyasins there at the time. So we're walking down the street, and there's this guy in an orange robe with the mala around his neck and stuff. And I was introduced, and I was real curious. You know, I just asked him about Osho, and I was just open and interested. And then he asked us, you know, if we wanted to come and have a drink. And all my judgments came up like, oh, that's not very spiritual. You know, I had all these ideas of what was spiritual at the time. But then when I got after music school, shortly after that, I went through a period where I almost died and took about a year to come back fully into the body. And during that time, I was living with my brother in his apartment while he was going to art school in Portland, Oregon. And I had become more and more interested in Osho at this time. He was still in India. And I would go around the bookstores there in Portland and just read Osho books. I just stand there, you know, most of the day and read these books. It was so common that the bookstore owners would, you know, bring me a chair, you know, so I could sit down and read. And, you know, I just was totally engrossed with, you know, delving into Osho's work, and wondering, how could I get to India to meet this guy and, you know, experience what was going on firsthand? But I also had still lots of ideas and lots of judgments and conditionings and everything to be broken down. And I'd go through periods where, you know, I'd read something of Osho's and I'd be like, oh, yeah, that's absolutely right on. And then later in the same book, I'm reading something else where it's actually, he's saying the opposite. And I'm, oh yeah, that's right on. I really agree. And then my mind would go, ah, what? It can't be both ways. You know, it's just the paradox and dichotomy and contradictions short circuited my mind, and it made me furious. So it would go between total love and total, you know, furiousness. So then I was living with my parents in Cannon Beach, Oregon, a little northern coast on the town. And I was working in a motel and building fires. So I was rolling up newspapers and putting them in to make the fire. And there was a picture of Osho on the paper, on the front page, I think, sitting outside on the steps of a trailer, and it says, you know, Guru comes to Oregon, you know, comes to Antelope. And it's, I mean, I knew by this time that he had come to the States. He was in New Jersey or someplace. And so then with a friend, I hitchhiked out to Antelope. And I got there and they said, oh, we can't take visitors, you know. So I had to hitchhike back to Portland, and I was so happy. I thought, oh boy, now I can wear green. I can have a worldly life. I don't have to worry about this guy. It's like I kept vacillating back and forth. Finally, I'm not going to have anything more to do with this guy, with this whole sannyasin business. And I took his pictures down, put them in a drawer. It was like, I'm done with this. And then I had a dream, a very, very powerful dream. I dreamed I was running through a forest. And as I was running, I was taking off my clothes one piece by piece and throwing it away till I was running naked through this forest. And, you know, it was a freeing, exhilarating feeling. And then I came out into this open meadow, this beautiful open meadow. And in the center of the open meadow was a stump, like a tree stump that was cut. So it was almost like a pedestal or an altar. And I walked up to the pedestal, and on it was a mala. Oh, I forgot to say, as I was running through the forest, as I was naked, there was, you know, orange red clothes that I picked up along the way on the forest floor and put on. And so I entered into this meadow wearing the colors, and I came up to the pedestal, and there was the mala. And I took the mala and I put it on, and I woke up from that dream, and I realized there's no going back. You know, I'm hooked. And so shortly after that, by this time it was 1982, and I went to the, September festival at the ranch, and took sannyas there on September 8th, which was a day before my 24th birthday. And after that, for the next 3 years or so, I lived in Hawaii and California, Texas, you know, around sannyasins and in sannyasin communities and centers and stuff. So that's how I came to Osho.
That's very, very beautiful. And sounds like you took sannyas in the dream, basically.
yeah, definitely. I mean, it was like after a dream like that, I couldn't deny, you know, what my heart was telling me. You know, the mind took a good time to to get the mind in line, but the heart was there from the beginning.
Yeah, sounds like that. You know, your heart was much ahead of your mind. It took a little while to catch up. And then once you took sannyas, Osho was in Oregon and you were there, but then you didn't live in the commune and you decided to stay with sannyasins in other parts, in other communes?
Yeah, I didn't live in the commune. I went and visited when I could. I was living in Santa Cruz, mostly at first. There was a wonderful, wonderful sannyasin community at the time in 82 and 83, before California cleared out under the, you know, guise of Osho saying, get out of California by the end of 83. Don't know if that actually came from him or not, but we were told it was. But then, you know, we'd have some work weekends where we'd go up to the ranch and spend time there. And then, of course, I was there through the whole, you know, time when all the Americans were there during the Share a Home program. But otherwise, I never had the money, you know, to be there. And I had some, you know, learning to do and deconditioning to do in the outside world and among the sannyas centers and stuff.
Do you remember the first time you saw Osho in person?
Yeah, it was when I went, you know, to take sannyas at that September festival for the drive-by. And so everybody's lined up along the road, and here comes Osho in the Rolls Royce, slowly coming down the line. And I looked at him and looked into his eyes, and there was just this unknown fathomlessness. You know, it's like just looking into the unknown. And I realized I don't know anything. I don't know anything about this guy. But, you know, it was very deep. You know, it was just the deep, deep feeling. And I've never, you know, had any personal contact, any personal experience with Osho. I've had in dreams, but not physically. But I, you know, at that time he was in silence and didn't, you know, have much contact with people. But I, in Pune, I went there twice in 87, 88 for 6 months, and then 89, 90 for 6 months, and was there when he left his body. But I had the great fortune of getting to play with the musicians, for the music, when he'd come in and when he'd leave from the discourses. And we got to, you know, where we were sitting was pretty close up near him. So many times I just was blessed to be able to be close, you know, up like that with the musicians. And that was a really special opportunity.
Yes. And in fact, I'd love to hear more about that, because I think that's a, you know, very special moment. And not just to be physically close to Osho, but also to play music for him. So, yeah, give us a bit of a sense of how it was for you to play music for Osho.
So I came I grew up playing classical guitar and trained in that to become a concert guitarist. And I also, you know, played folk and rock and jazz and, you know, other styles along the way as well. But I went through music school, graduated with a bachelor of music degree. But, you know, in that world, in the classical world, you know, it's highly competitive, as is with any, you know, occupations. I mean, professional occupations, but, you know, the arts and athletics and all of that is highly competitive, and you have to be at such a level, and it requires so much dedication and so much work and commitment and to keep your technique and chops up. And it's a very, very intense. And when I got out of music school, I realized that's not what I wanted. I wanted to explore and discover and create and make my own music. And that's what I did. I dropped playing classical and I just went into composing and synthesizing, you know, many more different styles of music, you know, into what I was doing and, you know, working towards less complexity, and more towards, as simple accessibility, which I think is what speaks more to the heart, bypassing the mind. And so as I came to Osho and in my time with Osho, it was more and more, you know, having that ambition and that competitiveness and that whole conditioning broken down, coming to more the pure healing aspect of music and music as something to create a space to be in, to, I mean, not that other music doesn't do that. I mean, all music does in a way, but to create a space that was conducive for the heart and quieting of the mind and for meditation as well as celebration. And, so it was just more and more coming into that world. And culminating in being around Osho and Pune and all the other musicians there, where we would get together in the mornings and see who was there. You know, it was always a changing. Milarepa was in charge of the music at the time, and he did a wonderful, wonderful job of, you know, coordinating things. And there'd be musicians coming in from all over the world, just like, you know, everybody, you know, there was every kind of country, nationality, ethnicity there. And so it was always so fresh with who was coming and who was showing up and what instruments they played. And so it, it was a coming together and seeing what we could create. You know, somebody had a bit of a tune, somebody else said something else. You just make something up and put it together to be used for that introduction to the discourse, and then for after the discourse. And lots of times you get there and it was like, now what was that we played this morning? Trying to remember, because it was so fresh. It was just in the moment so much. And so it was a very spontaneous, very lots improvised, and really listening to each other and being in the space. It was so different from the world of music as a career, as a performance, as trying to impress people, trying to get noticed, trying to all of those things that go along with the musical ego. It was, you know, the pure beauty of music and the space that could be created with the other musicians. So that was like the ultimate musical experience. You know, it spoiled me, and it's hard to go back into the world and, you know, try to do something with music after that.
Listening to what you just described, I can picture in my mind a bunch of musicians coming from different parts of the world with different background, almost improvise and compose some music fresh for the discourses. So that must have been very different from the way normally bands get together to compose music. So how that process was happening?
Well, you know, it's the creative process, but it's not like other bands don't do that and other musicians don't do that. But lots of times, you know, at its purest sense, it's the joy of making music and connecting and being together and sharing. And, but, you know, so much when it happens in the world, it's so colored by ambition and by competition, as I said, and also by finances and trying to sell something, trying to make something to sell, trying to make, you know, a hit. And so, you know, it's a whole different mindset. All musicians, you know, are striving for creativity and for those things, but I just felt it in a much purer form, you know, in the world of sannyas music.
That's a very beautiful, and in fact, it really reminds me that to be around Osho, the essence was this creativity element. In any other aspects of the sannyas community, the more I talk to the people who lived with Osho, the more I get the sense that you were doing whatever you were doing without, you know, you have to do it because you have an ambition, you have to make money. And I think it releases right. So much pure creativity that it's almost impossible to do it in a normal world where, you know, we all have to live and have an objective when we do something.
Right, right. And in that situation, you know, at the commune, you know, making the music, you're not getting paid for it. You're not, you know, doing it for anything like that. You're doing it out of love. You're doing it for the pure, you know, joy of sharing and being part of what Osho is doing and part of the commune and part of the space. So that's totally different thing than, you know, doing something for work, for pay and all of that.
Indeed. And that's why that music is still very much alive and so beautiful. And there are all the songs that were created at the time. They are incredibly beautiful. And I'll come to that in a second. But I'm just curious to know, did Osho ask which kind of music to play or gave any guidance on how to play the music before the discourses?
Well, I guess in a sense, I mean, I think he left it quite open and quite free. But, you know, there were times when he was involved, like when he developed the whole Oshoba thing, which was, you know, bringing in, you know, very strong rhythmic elements to it that combined with, you know, really spacey, really floaty, ambient. It was, you know, a meeting of really spaciousness and really alive, driving, rhythmic stuff. Like, so he was quite involved with that. I'm sure he gave Milarepa suggestions and things too, though I don't really know much about that. But pretty much we were free to do what we came up with, and that was always it's so funny because you get feedback, you know, after the discourses, you know, people would come up. We were always trying to do something creative and something new and something fresh and keep it alive, and so we'd explore, you know, all sorts of different things and throw in all sorts of different elements. But, you know, lots of times afterwards, people would come up, "Oh, that was the best it's ever been. That was just, oh, you really hit it tonight," you know. And others for the same music, for the same night, would come up, "You know, that was really off, you know. That, you shouldn't do that again. That was, you know." So you get complete opposite feedback, you know, from all kinds of people, you know, from, you know, the group leaders, the session leaders, all of this, and just everybody else. So it was quite amazing to see how people perceive the same thing so differently.
Yes, indeed. And you can't please everyone. That's one thing I've learned in life. In preparation of the interview, I read an article Milarepa wrote about you, and I've learned that you compose some beautiful Osho songs, which I love and use regularly for dancing and meditation, like Just Say Yes, Rising, Celebrate This Ecstasy, which is one of my favorites. And so, first of all, I take this opportunity to thank you very much for producing such beautiful songs. And then I'm curious to know how your creative process works. For example, I don't know, every musician, every composer is different. So perhaps some people have the words coming up in dreams, or what they are just walking, or the music and the tune come first. So, yeah, talk us through a little bit about your creative process.
Well, it's different, you know. Every song is different in a way. Some things, some ones just come almost like fully written, just so easy and so quick. And some I might labor over for years. And some the music might come first, some the, you know, lyrics might come first. They might go through changes. I might rewrite it and rewrite it. Or it might just be perfect like it came out, you know, simple. But for me, it used to be that I had to write songs. I had to write music. It was just something that I needed to do. And so I did it a lot. I'd write at least, you know, in my 20s and probably into my 30s, I'd write at least 3 or 4 songs a month that I was happy with. And it went in different directions. You know, I did have a music career, so to speak, in my early sannyas days. I had some instrumental records out on what would have been New Age labels at the time. My first record was called Joy, and came out under my legal name, Paul Griever. That eventually got distributed nationally by CBS Records in the States and in Japan. But so I've always been writing songs, and they were like part of my growth. You know, it's like they were like a diary or an exploration, or, you know, a diving into what I was into at the time, whether it was interpersonal things or whether it was, you know, spaces in meditation. And so I had a compulsion to write songs, and that has lessened over the years. Until now, I hardly had it at all. I rarely write songs now. But I have started writing some songs again lately. I've written some new ones just in the past, you know, months. So that's kind of nice to see that it can still happen, and I still have something to say or want to say. So yeah, it goes in many different ways. But for writing songs, you know, one of the main things for me is space. time and space. I used to have a lot more free time, free space that I could let songs happen, let songs incubate, you know, just sit for days and just play, experiment, meditate, just till something got a spark of something that you can catch and then start to develop and work on. But when it's a busy life, when it's you have a lot of things you have to do, you have schedules, time, deadlines, work, it's hard. I need space, I need the energy to write stuff, to write good stuff. So it's a mixed blessing with this, you know, lockdown, this quarantine time, because it gives all of us a lot more space and time. And that's when, you know, you can relax and more. And that's when meditation can happen more. That's when creativity and music can happen more.
I really like this image of space in order for creativity to flow. And I think this time of quarantine is very conducive to that. I've experimented that, you know, personally, you know, during this time, I felt like a wave of creativity just because, you know, there is more space, more time. And maybe can you describe how you compose Celebrate This Ecstasy, that particular song?
Well, let's see if I can remember. I suppose I just started with the music, the riff that it starts out with, da 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 da, which, you know, has this riff and then the repeating chords kind of thing. So I had that first, and then it probably just came, you know, pretty naturally, just after, you know, listening to Osho, reading some of Osho, just, you know, celebrate this ecstasy, you know. It's just like taking a line like that, and so that makes up the bulk of that song. It's just celebrate this ecstasy, and then there's little bits of verses and stuff, tune into nature, and that's one of my biggest connections, nature. I mean, for me, nature is God. That's where I feel the connection to godliness, you know, the easiest and the strongest. And so a lot of my lyrics key into nature and tie into nature.
So we'll keep this in my mind or in my heart, probably best to say, listening to that song. And the next time we meditate and celebrate to the tune of Celebrate This Ecstasy. So coming to your present day, I'm aware that you still play Osho music. And in fact, just a couple of days ago, Chetan and I, we both attended this virtual online satsang with yourself and Milarepa, and you were there playing music, very beautiful. So yeah, can you tell us a bit more about your current project and how you are connected with the Sannyas community and what kind of events you play music for?
Well, you know, my life, I don't socialize hardly any these past years, and I don't get together with sannyasins hardly, not because of not wanting to. It's just the way my life goes. It's pretty much filled up with work and with being with Premdo, my partner of 30 years. She's my commune. She's my Osho connection mostly. So I play out at satsangs a few times a year at the Osho Viha Meditation Center here in Marin. And that's always wonderful, you know, when that happens, to get together and share the satsang. But it, you know, as I say, it just usually happens a few times a year. Also, you know, it's wonderful what, Milarepa just started up in this time that you mentioned about the satsang that you took part in the other day. I mean, one can always sit by oneself at home and meditate, and that's totally complete and totally beautiful. But it seems like there's an interest and a need for people to connect too, still in community. It seems like people liked, you know, to do that and to connect in that way. So, you know, Milarepa asked me to, you know, contribute some music to that. So that was a pleasure. you know, to work on and do. And I think he's planning to continue it, you know, and do some more. So that's another way to hear Sanyas music.
That's lovely to hear, and look forward to the next one. And I must say, yeah, obviously, totally in favor of live satsang, meeting people in person, getting together physically. But at this time, obviously, we can't do that. But even regardless of the fact, it was so nice to have over 200 people at the same time getting together from all over the world, many friends that I know personally. I was looking at the names and the cameras and the music and the meditation.
Yeah.
And it's so much better than just meditate on my own. I felt like it was much better than my standard lonely meditation.
I understand what you say.
Okay, so Dananda, lovely. So we are heading towards the end. Is there anything else I didn't ask you that you would like to add and share with us?
Well, I can't think of anything at the moment. Other than I'm appreciative to you and to Punya and other people who are connecting Osho's work over making it available over the internet and spreading Osho in different ways.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. And yeah, Punya is really supporting to us at Love Osho. It has really been always, but specifically with this podcast, she gives a lot of space on Osho news, and we are very grateful. Okay, so I've got three final questions for you. What's your favorite meditation and why?
Out of all the meditations, you know, dynamic, Kundalini, Nada Brahma, Gaurishankar, all of those ones, probably Nada Brahma was my favorite. I probably did that the most. And Kundalini too. Those were my two favorite meditations. And now, you know, my meditation is mostly just sitting, you know, just sitting or lying in bed, just letting go and clearing and just being, just breathing, just being.
The last question is, you leave the Osho experiment. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2020?
Well, Osho is my heart, my oxygen. It's like Osho is my foundation. You know, that's still with me. It's like, I don't know what else to say. Anybody who's been with Osho, I don't see how they could ever lose that. I mean, even people who have turned against or seemingly turned against him, they'll never be the same. You know, there's no way they would ever be the same. They were fundamentally touched and transformed. I am just eternally grateful to Osho and his work and his commune.
Wonderful. Well, and I'm very grateful to you for sharing your story and your love for Osho in this interview. And perhaps you have already written a song on these lines, but, you know, Osho is my heart. Osho is my oxygen. Osho is my foundation. I think it's a good start for a new song.
And many songs that I have written that people don't know, like ones that are on the Celebrate album.
Okay, Sudananda. So that's the end of the show. Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure connecting with you, and I send you lots of love and a big hug.
Thank you so much, Swaram. Lots of love and a big hug to you too. Bye.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and leave a review. Visit loveosho.com for more episodes, blogs, or to connect with us.